This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We fundamentally believe we can innovate to a new material and really like shape a new material paradigm for, you know, a low carbon future.
You may be surprised to learn that, according to the United Nations Environment Program, buildings and construction accounts for a stunning 37% of global greenhouse emissions. Our guest today on Sea Change Radio is an innovator working to change the equation. We're speaking with entrepreneur Josh Dorfman, the co-founder of Planted and Supercool, to learn more about the green building space. We talk about the challenges of a young company making inroads into the construction industry, take a look at his company's innovative grass building material, and examine the competitive landscape in this area. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Josh Dorfman. He's the co-founder and CEO of both Planted and Supercool. Josh, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be here.
So I want to dive into Planted deeper, but first, why don't you give us an overview of what Supercool is all about?
Sure. Supercool is actually an extension in some respects of the work I was doing at Planted. The short of it is we're building a media company and really trying to explain these business cases of how climate solutions are here today, delivering value both for the climate, for consumers, for businesses. So that's really what Supercool is. I mean, we talk about climate solutions that cut carbon, boost the bottom line, and improve modern life. So we're really trying to tease out those stories. We think there's many of them underway, underrepresented in the media. And so we've set out to do that podcast, newsletter, et cetera.
And give us an example of one that is a good water cooler discussion topic that you've had some real good feedback on.
One of the episodes we did that I just really loved, we looked at cities that were able to build bike lanes three times faster than their peers. So rather than safe, connected, protected bike lanes taking decades, they were able to do it in a matter of months. And when I came across that, I thought, well, gosh, I need to understand how they do that. So this was actually a project that was run through People for Bikes. It's a, you know, an association that's advocating for more biking in America. But it was this guy, Kyle Wagenschutz, who had cut his teeth in Memphis, where he was a bike advocate. Memphis had been on the worst place to bike, or had worst place to bike honors 2 years running by Bicycling Magazine. New mayor comes in and says, all right, Kyle, you're hired. Your job, get us off the list. So that was back in 2010. He steadily figures out, well, how do we go do this in a place that is not necessarily amenable to biking? Figures a lot out. By 2015, he's at the White House. He's being honored. And then he goes and works with People for Bikes and on this kind of pilot program to say, look, let's look at Austin. Let's look at Denver. Let's look at New Orleans, Pittsburgh, Providence, kind of across the country, and understand in these different geographies with these different cities and different governments and different conditions, can we make bike lanes? Can we get them installed faster, really good ones? And so they did. So 24 months later, 335 miles of bike lanes go in. And so we get Kyle on the show. I'm saying, walk me through your playbook. How do you do that? Because everybody wants it. What's so hard? And he's like, well, you know, everybody wants it. Mayors proclaim it. Budget gets allocated. And then the wheels of inertia grind to a halt, or the cogs get clogged, right? And so one of the things he said that really struck me so interesting is like, look, if you want to go clear the runway, so to speak, for these projects to go through, you don't need to get people who like to bike on board. What you need to get is the people who don't like to bike on board. You need to go to car drivers and convince them that this is in their self-interest too. So he talked about the playbook for how you do that. So it could be a little bit of an appeal to nostalgia, safer streets, you know, your neighbors, you're out. It's more kind of a more friendly urban environment. But he had this whole kind of view on what leads to success, how to get more bike lanes, which of course is good for the planet and makes cities more livable. And, you know, why not? And so that just thrills me when we come across these kind of playbooks and innovation. So we talk to a ton of businesses, but things like that, I just think they're hard to argue with, and everyone can learn from it.
And I'm sure there's a lot of lessons to be taken away for your business, Planted. When you think about building materials, You want to appeal to people who generally don't think too much about the environment. Contractors, builders. Why don't you expand on the model and explain how Planted can work for everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Alex. So we got started on Planted about literally 4 years ago, March 2021. At the time, I was building a modern design, direct-to-consumer, sustainable furniture company in North Carolina, manufacturing locally, really trying to do everything local using Forest Stewardship Council certified woods. The pandemic hit. At first, that was good. And then it became challenging. Couldn't get materials. Our factory started to slow down. And I really started thinking a lot about this materials piece. And I was thinking about FSC certified wood. You know, they say it's responsibly harvested, but I just kept thinking, like, really? Like, is it really that great? Like, are we really going to save the planet this way? I think we need something that's just exponentially better. And in that moment, fortuitously, I connected with a guy who became my co-founder, Wada Tan, who had moved to Durham, North Carolina. I was in Asheville. And we started talking, and Wada was complimenting me on my business. And I was saying, well, I don't really know if we're going to do that much good. And he's like, well, what do you mean? What would be better? And I was like, well, if we came up with something that grew much faster than trees, that actually like could pull carbon from the atmosphere at a much more accelerated rate. And we just did something, you know, different around materials. And he said, well, you know, I've got six giant trash bags of industrial hemp in my garage. And so I said, well, what's your deal, man? Like, who are you? And he's like, well, I just moved here. I spent, you know, the past 8 years at SpaceX. I was responsible for designing the life support systems to keep astronauts alive on the Dragon crew spacecraft. And, you know, we just got to Durham. I put a spreadsheet together of, you know, the best places to live in America. And I'm an engineer, and this one rose to the top. We showed up, we liked it, we're here. And so I thought, wait a second, you left LA and moved to Durham, North Carolina, and you just spent years at SpaceX. Here's what we need to do. I'm going to shut down my company. I think you should shut down your little manufacturing thing, and we should go build a materials company together. And can you get more ex-SpaceXers to, or like, leave, show up? Can you get them here? And so that's kind of how we got started. And essentially what we do is that we grow this very fast growing grass that we took a long time to identify. We started with hemp, moved on from hemp for a bunch of reasons.
What is this grass? It grows, what, 20 to 30 feet a year?
Yeah, it's really rather extraordinary. And in fact, we found it, there's a whole suite of this whole family of grasses that universities look at, governments look at, certainly the private sector looks at. We were looking at every possible thing we could find to grow. And we happened to find this through the North Carolina Department of Ag. They had been testing different grasses as potential inputs for biofuels to replace corn. So the grass is now somewhat, you know, what we're growing is we keep it a little bit kind of close to the vest, what the actual like grass is. But we tissue culture it ourselves. We're vertically integrated. So we set up our own tissue culture lab. We have our own greenhouses. We grow these little plantlets, deliver them to farmers. They plant for us. And it's, yeah, so we're growing, you know, probably 9 times faster and more efficiently than you can with trees. And you get a fiber that is really excellent for then pressing into like a plywood replacement, or we would say an oriented strand board replacement, a structural material, walls, roofs, floors. And the key is, well, we think, I mean, there's two keys. One, you have to build an entirely new agricultural supply chain to do this. You have to make it entirely mechanized from, you know, from planting to harvesting. None of that's easy. But yeah, SpaceXers are like, well, nothing's harder than building a rocket ship. So we'll figure this out. And we have. And then what we said was, well, we don't want to give all this carbon back up a smokestack at a giant plant like you'd see, right, for OSB or plywood or engine or building materials. So let's go design an electric production system that, you know, has no smokestack, which is what we've done. And that's how we make our claim to carbon negativity. When we look at that life cycle analysis, we're pulling more carbon from the atmosphere than we have to use to turn that grass, that material, into a useful product. That's really the core, the genesis of what it is. And to your original point, yeah, we don't actually sell the sustainability benefits, or we don't lean into it. What we lean into, this is a better product. It's a competitively priced product. And we had just this past fall, the largest home builder in the country, D.R. Horton, that does prioritize sustainability more so than many other builders. But it's not necessarily, you know, by reputation, you wouldn't think they're necessarily a green builder, but they are putting a lot of emphasis on it, they gave us an order for 10 million panels. Now, 10 million panels is 90,000 homes. That is a big, big order for a young company to receive. And a lot of that goes, I think, to the certainly to the material itself and their confidence in the team to be able to deliver. The one thing I would just say is that I did step down as CEO last year, having gotten this off the ground and really put the, 3 years into it with an incredible core founding team and these incredible guys from SpaceX who are my co-founders. But this really is, in many respects, its own type of rocket ship.
You mentioned OSB. What does that stand for, Josh?
Fair question. And I didn't know what it was until we started this company and started working on it. So OSB stands for Oriented Strand Board. When you think about how homes are built today, and you're putting up the walls, you're putting on the roof, you're putting on the subfloor, that the insulation then, tucks up against. Years ago, that was all plywood, right? But plywood got replaced by this material that's called oriented strand board.
Is that like what we call in vernacular, like particle board?
It almost looks like a chipboard. It's a less expensive process. And some might argue, I mean, you get different types of building qualities, but you can do it generally cheaper than you can plywood. And so it's probably two-thirds of homes today in America are using oriented strand board instead of plywood. Our product will replace both, but generally when we're talking with home builders, they're asking us, how does your product compare to this material now, OSB or oriented strand board?
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to Josh Dorfman. He's the CEO of Supercool and the co-founder of Planted. So, Josh, we are talking about Planted and its value proposition to builders. You mentioned how the price is already competitive with larger scale producers of what's traditionally wood materials like plywood and things like that. How do you stay cost competitive before economies of scale have truly kicked in for your business?
Let me preface by a little bit by saying, for sure, we are still on a trajectory to get to pure price parity. But with that said, the market that we're entering into, when we conceived this business and we said, how do we design a business for maximum carbon impact, planetary impact to reduce the most carbon? And how are we going to be able to sequester that carbon away? Like, and we so we really start saying, well, let's look at what are the most ubiquitous materials used. And if we're going to replace trees, we're really looking at home building, right? Because most of the trees, they're cut down, they're used for lumber. That's generally for the home building industry. And so we said we have SpaceX capabilities. So it means we're going to build a factory and we're going to build an engineered material. Now there's a bunch. So we're not doing just like a 2x4 that's just basically wood, right? You cut it into a 2x4. It might warp a little bit, might not be awesome, but that's what generally what builders are using. And so we said we're going into the biggest market. That's a commodity market. That means, price is you cannot be in that market if you're not price competitive. The way that we conceived our models, we said, okay, if we're growing a biomass that grows much faster than trees, and we can site our factory very close to that biomass, we can have economics that are great. We can win in the field versus trees. We can definitely win in transportation. I'm talking about cost, right? And if we can build a modular machine and change the economics by essentially building machines that are almost 100 times cheaper than the way the industry builds a giant plywood or oriented strand board facility. Now, we're not going to, they'll have far more output. We can change the economics of how we scale this business. So we can compete on a manufacturing basis without necessarily having to have exactly the same amount of output coming out of our building as a giant company would, because we haven't invested as much into it in the first place. If you came to visit us in Oxford, North Carolina, where we set up our first shop, you'd see a production line that's in a you wouldn't you'd see the warehouse. You wouldn't necessarily think like, oh man, they're building, they're building materials in there, right? That's a because it just looks pretty much like a normal warehouse, and that's part of the beauty of our model. And you'd find a production line that's maybe about 140 feet long. It's not exactly a printer, but compared to the behemoth size of these, companies that we're competing, their facilities really are like the size of small towns. I mean, that's really a lot of the where a lot of the ingenuity and kind of breakthrough disruption is in our business model.
And I imagine a lot of these larger factories produce more product lines than what Planet is right now. You're still a fledgling company. How do you imagine your product line expanding?
Well, I would say it's actually almost the inverse of what you're describing. And so if you were to go to a plywood factory, for example, what you would see is this, it's called the press, because you're basically taking these layers of wood that have been sliced, right? And then gluing them and pressing them together. That press could be about 8 stories tall, weigh 4 million pounds. I mean, it is a behemoth. And all day long, it's essentially pressing plywood. When we thought about the production capability for Planted and said, well, what if we did something modular for a whole bunch of different reasons, right? Like I'm describing to you. And we had a press that's continuous, call it roughly 40 feet long. So you've got, your material coming in and you're pressing it as it's going through. Well, you can tune that press to produce a material that, say, is roughly half an inch. Okay, now you're talking about these panels, right? So the plywood-oriented strand board for your home, or 3/4 inch. You're talking about subfloor. But you could tune that same machine, or one right next to it, in a fairly small space, have another machine running that's producing something a little larger, say an inch and a half, which actually is like the dimension of, an engineered 2x4. And now, with essentially the same technology and essentially the same factory, you can imagine you're starting to produce all different kinds of building materials, engineered, carbon negative, that can start to have an impact on this industry. So a lot of that development's happening as well. And so the roadmap for where the company could go is very exciting, because it could really move into lots of different product categories.
For example,
Well, imagine, like I said, if you have the capability to produce something that's 40 continuous, one continuous piece of material, 40 feet long and roughly an inch and a half thick, this giant board, right? And then 4 feet wide, right? 4 feet wide, 40 feet long, say an inch and a half thick, very, very strong. Effectively, what you're doing is you're building something. We're seeing buildings built today from what's called mass timber, right? Tall buildings made out of wood. Well, you could build tall buildings with that same material and make them out of grass. So there's, where, how the foundational thought, the vision for Planted was to say carbon negative building materials for every new home and building on Earth. It's one thing to say, you know what, we're going to allow the forest to continue to grow. We're not going to cut down trees to build homes anymore, because we have a better way to do that, better for the planet, and you can build better, sturdier, more durable homes. It's another thing to say, and then we're going to go build buildings where you no longer have to use steel and concrete, because those have a far greater impact on carbon emissions than does lumber, right? When you're working with guys who have been at SpaceX for years, and they went there because they want to go to Mars, like everyone at SpaceX wants to go to Mars, they still want to go to Mars, right? But you still need to have a machine on Mars to make materials, right? So the way this is conceived, the end game of the impact that a business like Planted can have, we see it as civilizational change. And when you look back into history, a lot of how we mark time periods are by materials, right? And whether there's
the Stone Age, the Bronze Age,
certainly that, but even when you look at how the materials that the Romans used for aqueducts, or you know, these core innovations, there's material innovation in building that's taking place.
Or the British transitioning from wood to coal.
Right, for in terms of energy consumption. And so mm-hmm. when we think 21st century, we just think, why would we possibly still be cutting down trees to make buildings? And why would we possibly be smeltering, creating concrete and have, you know, and all the emissions associated with steel? We know why, but we also know that we fundamentally believe we can innovate to a new material, kind of really like shape a new material paradigm for, you know, a low carbon future.
I was once out strolling one very hot summer's day, when I thought I'd lay myself down to rest in a big field of tall grass. I lay there in the sun and felt it caressing my face as I fell asleep and dreamed. I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, and that I was the star of the movie. This really blew my mind, the fact that me, an overfed, long-haired, leaping gnome, should be the star of a Hollywood movie. But there I was. I was taken to a place.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Josh Dorfman. He's the CEO of Supercool and the co-founder of Planted. So maybe you can give us some other applications for these innovations.
Sure. When we actually found this grass, I mentioned that we had been doing a lot of research, hustling all over the country, trying to figure out what could fit our criteria: rapid growth, durability, you know, commercial scale, economies of scale. And we connected in with the Department of Ag. The project, you know, that they'd been working on to see if this different feedstocks could be used for biofuels, that unfortunately had come to an end. And so they just happened to have still some fields standing that we were able to get access to and do testing. But what's remarkable about the North Carolina Department of Ag and many other state departments of agriculture, they're incredible organizations. They're incredibly responsive. They're incredibly market oriented. We do see a ton of research, for example, happening around hemp and field plots and test plots, and working with companies working with the Department of Ag and other researchers at like NC State to see how, you know, supply chains could be built. So I'm not sure that there's necessarily, I wouldn't be able to necessarily forecast that this particular grass that we're using would have other use cases. We're really focused on economies of scale, playing in the biggest commoditized engineered wood market in the country, which is essentially the largest engineered wood market in the world, for maximum impact. And that's going to take us a long time to satisfy kind of those goals and what we're setting out to do. So I do think there's a lot of other innovation happening with other materials, but that's kind of how I see the market today.
Maybe you can give us a snapshot of the competitive landscape in the green building space. Where are some of the more interesting materials coming from in terms of feedstock and from a global perspective?
Absolutely. I think one of the developments I've seen that I find incredibly exciting and inspiring is a company called EcoCocon, E-C-O-C-O-C-O-N, that got started in Eastern Europe. But what they've pioneered and done an extraordinary job of is taking straw bale construction and really industrializing that process, so that it's very large buildings across Europe today are actually being built with straw. You know, so you have these kind of framed out, you know, wood and straw structures, but I'm talking about like huge warehouses and you know, maybe 15, 16, 17 story tall buildings.
This is not the Three Little Pigs with their straw houses. Yes.
It's not the Three Little Pigs, and it's not the Back to the Lander, I'm going to do a straw bale construction or something that has stayed kind of like how we started this conversation, a little more niche, right? Doesn't really have mainstream appeal. They're mainstream appealing straw bale construction. And that is extraordinary because that also gets to a low carbon, maybe even a carbon negative product. And straw is everywhere, right? Every country has straw. And so when you imagine what the implications are for that type of business and business model and material, that's pretty exciting to me.
What is your vision for Super Cool? You mentioned how it's a media company, but how does it relate to Planted and other similar businesses as Super Cool continues to evolve?
The idea really behind Super Cool is for business and policy decision makers, people who are not necessarily steeped in climate solutions. They're not the sustainability officer, but climate's increasingly encroaching on everyone's jobs and careers and livelihoods. What we're showing them are solutions that are here now, that are working, that have a business case around them. Either they can make your business more profitable or save you money. But at the same time, aren't just about moving us to a future where we don't die, right? It's actually moving us to a future where we solve climate and the world gets better. Now, maybe that's something like Brainbox AI that's figured out how to put AI in buildings and cut HVAC, carbon consumption by 40% and make buildings more comfortable because they control everything and they can tell you who's going to be in that space in 6 hours and adjust the temperature accordingly so that nothing spikes, everything's smooth, and the business saves money. Or it's a company like Zoom that's actually in just 5 years taken over student transportation for 4,000 schools, and they've developed an ability to they basically take brought school buses into the 21st century. Everyone's been having the same experience on the school bus as your grandparents. You get on, nobody knows where it is. The administrator doesn't know where it is. Who knows if the route is right? Zoom is applying AI to streamline those routes and make sure that people actually are picked up on time and delivered to school on time. And that saves a lot of diesel from being emitted in communities. And so we see this really interesting connection between software and hardware and physical infrastructure that's making the experience for humans better, cutting carbon at the same time, and building a real business case for other companies, other school districts, other types of municipalities to embrace technologies that can bring us into the future. It's very exciting to me, and that's really what we're trying to show, is that these solutions are here. They're delivering value right now, just like Planted is doing in the building materials industry. There's so much innovation underway.
He's the co-founder of Super Cool and Planted, which is PLANTD, planted.com. Josh Dorfman. Josh, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. It was a pleasure to be here today.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Ramsey Lewis, The Beastie Boys, and War.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.